Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome to this edition of the John Papaloni Show. Today, I have Austin Armstrong with Social Tea.
Hey, brother, how are you?
Thank Absolutely you. Amazing. I think I got it right.
Social Tea Pro, but almost
Social Tea Pro, almost. I was so close. With that being said, let me not ruin your bio, and let's get you to introduce yourself with who you are, what you do, and how you got there.
So I've done a lot of stuff. So I am a full service digital marketing agency owner. We specialize in short form vertical video. I'm a lead by example type of entrepreneur and business owner. So I have about 2.5 million followers across TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram currently using short form vertical video. I've worked in just about every service-based industry under the sun, helping business owners and entrepreneurs with their short-form vertical video and digital marketing strategies. I primarily focus on organic. I don't do any paid advertising. Organic is just such a, it's more rewarding for me. I have spoken all around the country at very large events. I hate to say this, but you know, it feels weird to call yourself an expert, but I'm a nationally recognized thought leader in short form vertical video marketing strategies. I also launched an AI marketing SaaS tool called Syllabi, and the website for that is syllabi.io about 2 months ago. That's been phenomenal. And I'm just living my best life here, man, playing on social media, helping people along the way and having a lot of fun.
Well, look, You said something interesting here, right? Like you got 2 million followers. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, about 2.6 million, I think is the accurate number across the board right now.
And that was organic.
Yep. I've never spent a dollar on advertising for my company.
That is fascinating.
Thank you.
Because, you know, you don't hear that unless you're a Kardashian. Usually, you know what I mean? Like followers and stuff like that. And those levels are like the gym rats, right? You know, like, ooh, I'm a big muscular guy and I work out and all that. I never use steroids. Meanwhile, they use steroids. It's pretty obvious, right?
I swear to God, I've never.
So no, I believe you, but I'm just saying, right? Like, so it's usually like most times it's when people try to hide it, right? Like you can tell the way a person words it. Right. Like and the way a person words it is usually the dead giveaway when they try to hide behind the followers, you know, and they just talk about organic. They don't bring up the number. They hide the metrics. It's usually because half of it is crap. And that's why they don't want people to know. Yeah. Now, let's be honest. You can always tell whether it's a real crowd or a bull crap crowd, because look at a post. When you see someone's post, if they got 2 million followers and 20 likes, you know something's going on.
Something's going on. Absolutely. There are definitely some dead giveaways.
Exactly, right? So there you go, right? So that's the key component. Or they got 30 comments and no replies, or they're all robotic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So it's obvious. I think the fake it till you make it nonsense is kind of a dead zone, because if anyone that's paying attention can tell. But with that being said, I mean, kudos to you for, you know, doing that. So I want to touch upon, how did you build that, and like over what period of time?
Yeah, consistency over time is the success to everything. So I've been doing social media marketing for about 18 years. I actually got started back on MySpace. I have really focused on this organic growth when I started my business 4 years ago. So that's when this whole journey started for Social Tea Pro. And it started the first couple of months, you know, of the business, you're scrambling. It was my first business. Didn't know, you know, I've worked at companies before, but this was my baby, and I had the opportunity to do it my way and chase different paths that I thought would work. And funny enough, I went all in on TikTok, and that's where my life actually changed. So say what you will, think what you will about TikTok. It has drastically changed my life for the better and completely changed the trajectory of who I am as a person and the directive of my business. And so I started to build up a lot of momentum on TikTok. I started creating videos sharing SEO tips, search engine optimization, and video marketing tips and strategies, and just providing the best information and strategies that I knew how to do completely for free. Started to build up momentum on that. I leveraged that into speaking engagements, which helped me network with some of the best people in the world, and people that I've looked up to for years, I now consider very close friends. And so I did that for long enough. I didn't want to just be the TikTok guy. I saw, you know, the writing on the wall. You never want to put all of your eggs in one basket. You never know if the platform is going to go away or an algorithm shift happens, your account gets taken down, one of various things. And so because of the rapid growth of TikTok, all of the other more mature platforms started to embrace and roll out functionality for short form vertical video. YouTube rolled out YouTube Shorts very timely. As soon as India had banned it, YouTube was like, hey, we're here to capture the market. Instagram Reels rolled out shortly after that. Facebook Reels rolled out shortly after that. And I've just been hustling ever since. So over the last 4 years, I've posted somewhere in between 2,500 to 3,000 videos. I just leverage those videos across all four platforms. And because those four platforms are pushing that format of content organically, it's just working across the board. Now, there's a little bit of individual platform optimization that goes into play, but the vast majority are the same videos, and I just post them daily. I just am consistent above all else.
Right. That makes sense. Now, yeah, you touched upon so many things. I know I'm going to forget half the questions I have right now. But anyways, with that, where I'm going to go with it and where I want to take it here is that now you said a little bit of optimization and stuff, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. What does that look like?
Yeah. So different platforms use hashtags differently, for instance. So on TikTok, I use 4 to 5 hashtags that are very broad, oriented with the video. Facebook, same strategy. So my hashtag strategy is very similar between TikTok and Facebook right now, actually. Instagram, I don't use any hashtags anymore. They just rolled out topics when you're uploading videos or reels specifically. Topics are replacing hashtags on Instagram. So just optimizing that description around that and setting up to 3 topics that are relevant to your video. YouTube, hashtags don't do anything, and optimizing the title is what I found to be the most relevant thing for YouTube Shorts specifically. Quick, interesting story perhaps here. I uploaded 600 YouTube Shorts and they did jack shit. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on your podcast, but I will. It's there. yeah, so 600 failures or lessons learned. And what I was doing was the old school, like, SEO YouTube game, like optimize that video to be found for search. And because YouTube Shorts is such a new format, that is not how the algorithm for Shorts works. And unfortunately, it took me a very long time to realize that. But at some point, you have that epiphany of I'm doing the same thing over and over again. It's not working. Let me try something else. And so what I did was I really broadened those titles up, really broad, almost clickbaity, but still relevant to what the video was about. And I hyper-focused on, rather than uploading any and every video, I was only going to upload my top performing ones. And these were videos like, these 5 websites feel illegal to know, top 5 useful websites for business owners and entrepreneurs, 5 websites for X, Y, and Z. It was this recurring website series of content that really worked well for me across the board. And so when I started only going all in, niching down on those types of videos, I made my titles a little bit broader. YouTube exploded very, very quickly. And so, you know, there's always little micro optimizations that you should test and optimize for on any individual platform, but keep testing it. You know, everybody's account is going to be a little bit different to some degree, what the algorithm wants, what your audience is looking for. Those audience signals are incredibly important. So that's, those are some of the subtleties of how I optimize individually on each platform.
Right. Now, don't mind me looking away. I've actually, you know, congratulations. You've got me to be so curious that I'm actually, I opened up Microsoft Word so that I can write down notes. So oh, I cool. know what to ask you. And I mean, like, you've opened up so many topics here that, oh man, this is amazing. So let me start off with my first, you know, point of entry here. Like, when you create these titles, are you like, what's the process of there? Like, do you use ChatGPT or do you actually have a different process for titles, or was it a combination of, I started, you know, a different way. Now I'm using ChatGPT.
So I'm not using ChatGPT for video titles. I use ChatGPT for some other stuff. Of course we have to, at this point, gotta adopt it. This is going to be probably the most shocking thing, on YouTube Shorts. When you get a title that works, do it over and over and over and over again. Same exact title, maybe subtle differences. And so one video popped for me, and the title of that was Top 5 Most Useful Websites. Exploded. What did I do? I cranked out more videos, very similar to it, exact same structure. And literally to a T, I just copy and pasted that title. It seems so counterintuitive. It's what no YouTube expert recommends for long form content, but this is a whole new game. The strategies that have worked for long form YouTube content for the last 16 years don't work for this brand new format of content. And so with that old methodology, it didn't work. The best practices for the old stuff didn't work. So I had to think outside of the box and do my own testing, and it's been crazy. So that's really my titling is, you know, top 5 most useful websites, top 5 new useful websites, top 5 AI websites. These 5 websites feel illegal to know. Those are that's my titling game, and I just keep doing it until it stops working. But it's been working pretty crazy. So YouTube in particular, it's been about 10 months now. But in those 10 months, I went from 5,000 subscribers to I'm about 580,000 YouTube subscribers right now, just to give you some numbers.
Right, right. Now, which brings up a point here. Now, if you're using top 5 websites, top 5 AI website, doesn't that mean you're basically talking about the same thing over and over and over and over?
Pretty much, but the variables in the video change. So the websites are, it's not just the same 5 websites every single time. The opening hook stays the same. The ending call to action often stays the same, but the meat and potatoes of the video, the middle, changes video to video.
Well, yeah, let's explore that a little bit more, because mm-hmm. it's seeming a little odd to me here. And here's sure. what I mean. Prime example, I'm going to use myself as a real estate agent. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to pretend that the title of our bidding war is over as you know, the mm-hmm. Topic that gets everybody, right?
Yeah.
Now, I can't exactly go in and say our bidding war is over, get into it and saying, hey, you know what? Bidding wars in different states are acting differently. Oh, by the way, the mortgage rate for today is 5% and 6% tomorrow, and it could vary. So you should lock into your mortgage with your mortgage broker and get a you know, fixed rate immediately before that changes, because the Bank of Canada or the Bank of America can change that instantly, and then get into the how to take care of your lawn care needs for the upcoming weather. Like, it seems odd to have that title, mm-hmm. and then see how I just sporadically went into different topics like that. That just seems odd.
Yeah, totally. And so that might be too specific of a topic, right? You might want to broaden it up a little bit and reach more people. So like top 3 mortgage secrets, or 5 home loan hacks that feel illegal to know, right? And so you can change those facts out, but the title would still be the same because it encompasses that idea.
Right.
That makes sense?
A little bit, but here's the thing though. But in a sense, like, if I tell you the top 3 homes,
mm-hmm.
well, if I told you the top 3 homes were in Florida,
mm-hmm.
as an example, in Miami, now I'm telling you the top 3 homes is in Naples, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how can the top three homes be in Miami and in Florida, or and in Naples? You understand what I'm saying? Like I'm saying, I'm changing my answers, but I'm using the same title. So isn't it in some way it could infer that I was lying about one of the videos?
It's possible that you could get that reaction. The reality of what I've found is that not every single person is going to see every video. The platforms want to show your videos to new people. And that's inadvertently also an engagement hack. And so what would happen is if you said that, the same thing, like you said that about the last three homes, they're going to run to the comments and say that and point that out. But that increases the engagement on that video, and it's going to help that video reach more people. And so it might change, and it could change, right? The prices of homes could change at any given time. It depends when people are actually watching that video.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Like I was kind of curious about that, right? Like it opened up that that box there. Because I mean,
it's a great point. And sorry to cut you off. The other caveat here is like, you know, it might not work for every industry. That's another point too. It's worked really well for me. We've done this in several industries. It might not make sense for everybody.
Okay. Well, let me expand on this. Because you brought up a point here. It doesn't work for every industry. Now you're doing it for yours. What is the end goal? What is the end target here that would make sense for you to do that?
Yeah. So there's a couple reasons why I've done this series. One is affiliate marketing. So a lot of the websites that I promote, I'm actually an affiliate for, and I have a big list of all of those websites. And so by actively promoting those websites, people will sign up for those websites and I get a commission, a percentage commission of everybody that signs up for those websites. So that's one reason that I continually doing that. The other is to go back to the beginning of the episode, I had mentioned my SaaS company, Syllabi, that I had just launched. So I knew that I was going to launch this about 2 years ago. And it was just an idea at that phase. But any idea that I have that I stick with, I do my due diligence and work actively towards that. So I've spent the last 2 years, rather than fundraising and going the venture capital route, I figured out how to market AI and SaaS websites. So I built a large audience and mastered how to market AI and SaaS websites over the last 2 years, built up this loyal audience, built up a huge email list, built up this, you know, active, engaged community of people interested in the websites that I share every day, so that when I was ready to not even launch, but pre-launch, build a waiting list for this tool, I could send all signals firing to my tool, and it's worked beautifully. So those are the two main strategies of why I do that.
Gotcha. So Syllabi. Okay. So that is, that works with AI basically.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. So it's SEO meets AI. It helps you create better videos for social media. So it shows you what topics and what questions your customers are searching for, helps you generate video scripts, and helps you stay accountable with a content calendar consistency tracker. And then we're rolling out some really cool other updates in that space as well.
Well, that's phenomenal. Like, who would your target audience be in terms of this product?
For Syllabi?
Yeah.
Service-based businesses. So it's a great tool for real estate agents, lawyers, doctors, drug and alcohol treatment centers, which is a background that I come from. Anybody that offers a particular service that people are looking for or asking questions about online, it works really well for. It's not that great of a tool, honestly, for products. Like if you sell widgets or thingamadiggers, you know, whatever your individual thing is, if there's not a lot of search volume or questions around that, it's not the best tool for that. There's probably other great tools, but primarily service-based business owners.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Now I get that. So what was the inspiration behind all this? Like, I mean, you could have done many things in your life. And now I want to touch upon there. You said the drug and alcohol thing was sort of your space.
Mm-hmm.
And in what way?
So the first part of that question, I have been doing social media marketing for 18 years. I've been, even before my business, that's now 4 years old, but I've been working in the agency side of things for about 8 years professionally. And these were a lot of the biggest problems that business owners faced. I don't know what topics to create. I don't know what to say in my videos. I need help staying consistent. I don't like being on camera. I don't have the money to pay for a marketing agency. And so I just came to the conclusion, okay, let's build a tool that answers all of these problems. It's low cost. It's low cost. So you don't have to hire an expensive agency. All you need to know is the service that you offer. And it shows you a huge list of questions that people are asking for, particular to your service or to your industry. You can generate short form scripts or long form scripts for longer YouTube videos. You can organize everything on a content calendar so you know exactly when to shoot something. You can mark it as complete. The next update that we're rolling out is as soon as next week, actually, is AI avatar video creation. So you can then take the scripts and click generate video, choose your avatar, choose your voiceover, choose your language as well. And it generates an artificial human with a realistic voice that reads that script. So you don't even need to be on camera anymore. So my big vision and goal here is social media has changed my life. And I just want to overcome every obstacle and excuse that people have so that it can help change their lives and their businesses too. Now, on the addiction treatment side of things, my sister's in recovery. That led me to move to California about 8 or 9 years ago at this point. I'm not in California anymore, but to be a supportive brother, and there was nothing keeping me in New Jersey where I was living at the time. So I said, let's move to California, see what happens. Gotcha. That led me to becoming an intern at a video marketing agency that specialized in behavioral health marketing for drug and alcohol treatment centers, for therapists, for individual practitioners. The owner of that company is now my business partner, actually, but he's a clinical psychologist. And he's been the clinical director of several drug and alcohol treatment centers, as well as a personal mentor to me. And so because of that relationship and being an intern and moving up in the ranks under that company, that led me to being the head of digital marketing at several drug and alcohol treatment centers. I've grown to really love and appreciate that industry, work with many incredible practitioners, LMFTs, therapists, psychologists, interventionists, centers as a whole that are just saving lives in this epidemic and disease called addiction. So I have a strong passion for that industry. So that's why I gravitated towards that space. And I still very much work in that space.
That makes total sense. Now I get it. I'm not going to lie. I thought there was two possibilities of where you're going to go with that. That's why I kind of hesitated with that question. Mm-hmm. And you went to neither of the thoughts I thought you were going to go to.
So what were your thoughts?
That's actually a good one. Well, one, I thought it might have been a personal thing as in yourself. And that's the one I was trying to avoid getting into.
Hey, I'm an open book, brother.
Yeah, it would have been the truth, but it was sort of a little offline from the whole marketing perspective. But anyways, regardless. And then the other one, I thought maybe there was some other connection to it. Maybe sometimes people go through things and they find a knack. And I thought maybe you found a knack or a niche that was working. So you just sort of, poured gas on the fire kind of thing. Again, you sort of had, it is a personal story, but you also found that way to gas it. So you kind of combined both sides and you came down the middle of what I thought.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Which brings up another two points, actually. One is going to be a little bit longer. So I'm going to go into the shorter point now. Which is that, you know, you obviously started into something that paid off a salary, like almost like a regular salary worker. Mm-hmm. And you chose to get out of that and into doing your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why? You could have continued to get a salary. You probably could have got other employees to just keep giving you raises or, stay at one company, leave to another one with a higher pay and continue until you run out of options, right? That is a possibility. And that seems to be what a lot of people are doing today. Now, whether I think it's morally right or wrong, that's a whole different topic and irrelevant.
Yeah.
It's the point is that it's an option that you could have had, but you decided that you wanted to venture on your own. So what was the driving force?
So I had started my agency as a side hustle at the time. I was always just kind of interested in it, get my own piece of the thing. You know, I got really good at marketing. And so eventually I had that epiphany of like, you know, I'm good at this. I'm helping generate a lot of money for these other companies. I could generate a lot of money for my own thing. And so that's why I started the agency. The honest answer is I got fired from the treatment center in the middle of the pandemic. So this was about 6 months into starting the company. I had gone remote a little bit before the pandemic. And then June of 2020, I was working remote for a drug and alcohol treatment center. They fired me. And so I had gotten, I was faced with that entrepreneurial decision of, do I try and find another job in the middle of the pandemic? I digress here for a second, but I also don't have a college degree. I went the internship route and entrepreneurship route eventually, right? So do I try and find a job in the middle of the pandemic? No college degree. Yes, I do have a lot of specific experience. Or do I bet on myself, go all in, see what I'm made of? I was in my 20s, late 20s at the time. So I was young enough to fail. I don't have kids. Talk to my business partner, talk to my wife. It was a why not try it? And so I did. And it was by far the best decision I ever could have made. And so you could always be, you know, an employee. You can go that way. It's scary to venture out on yourself. Sometimes it's scarier to make the decision when you have a comfy job. I was kind of thrown into it because I did get fired, and I'm sort of thankful for it now. You know, looking back, because I probably would have prolonged that step for a long period of time, and because I was comfortable. You know, you get comfortable with the job. You have the health insurance, the benefits, a stable paycheck, and you just put up with the crap and the bureaucracy of being an employee because of that stability. And sometimes it's really comfortable if you make a lot of money, right? And you're like, what am I going to do on my own? I always knew I was going to eventually be an entrepreneur. I've done entrepreneurial stuff as long as I can remember, back in elementary school. It was just a matter of time before I jumped all in. And that's a little bit about my story on that.
Gotcha. That makes sense. I get that. And yeah, sometimes opportunity presents itself and you have to decide what route, if you're going to take it or not. And yeah, you're right. Being comfortable is easy for everybody. A lot of people don't realize, but taking that drone route where you're relying on other people is actually a scarier route to take. But because we've been programmed and we've been taught that that is the safe way.
Yeah.
Nobody analyzes it and really considers the actual facts. But think about it. By doing that drone and working for somebody else and, you know, being told what to do, you're at their mercy. Your whole life and your whole financial future is at the mercy of someone else's decision.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, that's actually a scarier path. It's just not the way we're programmed to think of it.
Yeah.
So, but you brought up another point. I agree with you. Thank you. You brought up another point here, right? And one thing that I'm reading a book called Who, Not Now. Not How, I mean. And what you're talking about really is illustrating what the book is talking about. And too many times we go out there, we want to scale, we want to get big, we want to do massive, massive change, and we try to do it by ourselves. And we think about it that way, and we try to plan everything we can do just to find out that we're overwhelmed and usually nowhere near the direction we want to go. And I think the biggest fundamental problem we have is because we have an idea, and the first question we have is, how do we do it? And the first question we should have is, who do I need to be around, or who do I need to know that can help me get to that goal? If you figure out who can get you there, then the how comes with it.
I love that. Completely agree. No, that's good. I have to read that. I'm going to have to pick up that book. So thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure.
I mean, that's 100%. I can't do anything by myself. No way. know, I've been fortunate enough to have a very supportive and rock star wife. I have an amazing business partner who was a mentor to me and brought me up from unpaid intern to where I am today. And he's invested a lot of time and money into my skills. And we saw the big picture together and I stuck with it. Right. And now it's not just us two. We have amazing employees, an amazing staff of people all around the country. And we have a couple people all around the world on both business sides of things. You can't do everything yourself. You have to surround yourself and find the right people to help take you to that spot. And also don't be afraid to delegate. I love the saying, I say this all the time, outsource your suck. There's a lot of things that I do not like to do and that I suck at. I want to focus my time and energy on what I enjoy doing and what I'm best at. I'm a marketer. I love jumping on podcasts like this. I love speaking. I love talking about this stuff. I love making videos. I love, you know, content, developing content strategy, diving deep into that, coaching, consulting. That's all I want to do. And so you can't start with that, but you can get far enough ahead to then find somebody and train them how to do it just like you do it, and then offload that so that you can focus more on the thing that you love to do. And that has worked really well for me, is continuing to build, hire and take something off of my plate, build, hire and take things off of my plate so that I can focus more on what my calling is on life and what my superpowers are, and build a team around all of the other things. And that is, you know, the epitome of what you said too, is like, who can you bring on with you that sees that same vision and that can take you where you want to go, but as a whole, and doing it together as a team.
Wonderfully said. So with that being said, what advice would you have to a new and aspiring entrepreneur that is scared to take the leap, but has this massive desire to break free from where they are and go where they want to be?
It's easier said than done, depending on certain circumstances. But in my case, I would just say, rip the Band-Aid off and go for it. The vast majority of people, even if you fail, you're going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Every failure is a lesson learned. And I would rather fail than live my life saying, what if I could have done that thing? I could have built a business. I had a really cool idea, but I never took action on it. And that would drive me crazier my whole life if I never took action and I didn't at least try, than if I had failed. If I did it and I had failed, at least I had tried. So that's the first thing, and stick with it. You know, so many people give up so early on. You have to stay consistent. This is a marathon, not a sprint. This is a journey. Enjoy the journey. Enjoy the process. See that big picture goal. I've been doing this for 18 years on social media, professionally, as an employee to where I am today, 9 years straight. And only really the last 2 years has everything clicked, fallen into place, and I'm exactly where I want to be, and I couldn't be happier. But it's because I put in all of that work, continued to learn, continued to fail, continued to learn from the failures, keep trying, keep testing, keep learning, keep networking, keep talking to other people, keep building that team, and constantly improving. So be in it for the long run. Don't be afraid to fail. Just get started.
Wonderful. Two more questions before I go into what I call the lightning round. So second last question is, how do you know you've had a successful day?
I outline a to-do list. And if I'm able to accomplish most of those things on the to-do list, plus still have enjoyable time with my wife and my dog, I consider that a pretty good day.
And it should be. I mean, you got outlined it there, right there. It's time. It's time with people you care about.
Yes.
Last but not least, where do people find you?
Whatever your preferred social media platform is, at Socialty Pro, that's SocialtyPro. My name's Austin Armstrong, so you can find me on Facebook or LinkedIn at that. I'll connect with you anywhere.
Fantastic. So we're going to get into the lightning round, which is just a few questions.
All right.
That are more about personal and less about business.
I'm ready.
We're going to start off with my favorite question, which is, what is your favorite food and why?
Chicken parm. I just love that dish. My mom always made it for me as a kid. It's nostalgia. Who doesn't love a fried piece of chicken with a bunch of sauce and a bunch of fresh mozzarella on there?
Yeah, we have that in common there. I mean, that's something I remember growing up with. So I love that too. Yeah, my mom used to make that. It was chicken and veal. Yeah, depending on the day.
Yeah. Oh, the veal's the good stuff. That's the good stuff right there.
That's awesome. Favorite vacation spot?
I've had the privilege of traveling a lot recently. I tend to like beachy, warmer spots. We did Hawaii for our honeymoon and talk about it all the time and want to go back. So Hawaii is the first place that comes to mind.
Makes sense. Okay. Third, favorite podcast or book?
I'll give you both. So I love the social media marketing podcast with Mike Stelzner. I'm a nerd about social media, if that didn't come across in this episode. So not that's at all. that was a great a great podcast that I've listened to for years. I've learned so much. It's a tactical podcast, so I love that. And then my favorite book is The Alchemist. I just really resonated with that book the first time I listened to it, and then I've read it and I've come back to it several times. Great book, and very inspiring to anybody that's chasing a goal or anything in your life. It's a great motivational, fun book.
That's interesting, because I've seen the book. I've come across it. It's not strange to me, but I never actually got it. Like, it was one of those things you saw, you remember the name, you remember seeing it, you remember what the cover looks like.
Yep.
You just never picked it up.
I would highly recommend it. It's fun. It's an easy read. It's a story. It's not like a business book.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Okay. Last but not least, if you had unlimited amount of money, but you only had 48 hours to spend it, what you spend, you get to keep. What you don't gets taken away. What would you do?
I'm not dying in this scenario, right?
No. It's like the new form of lottery. You just get the opportunity where you can grant all the wishes you want. It's just that you have to grant the wishes, and what you don't use is gone. And you got to go back to living the way you're living or whatever it is.
Okay, so I'm a very experiential driven person over things. So what I'd probably do is I would just book a bunch of travel stuff years in advance. So I would just spend 48 hours and just book trips for the next 40 years, vacation, hotels, flights, yachts, you know, all the, the whole nine yards. I would spend it probably all on travel.
Makes sense. Now, I love that. See, a lot of people just asked, if you won the lottery and you got $1 million or $2 million, what would you do? Then you get I'd buy myself a house. I'd pay off my mortgage. I would get a Ferrari, blah, 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 blah. And usually that's 98% of the things that people would not do. Yeah. Right? Where if you ask it the way I did ask it, you get the what's really on your mind.
Yeah.
So that's why I asked it that way. Austin, this has been an incredible episode. I am super stoked that you were here, and I can't wait for my listeners and viewers to be able to hear and see this.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a privilege.
Absolute pleasure, man. If you like what you saw and you want to see more episodes, subscribe to the link below.